Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only...
Willie Nile, look out.
Who's coming to the Hamilton Live, great venue, Saturday, April 8th. Thanks so much for coming in, Willie.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to the show. That we played the Hamilton last year. It's a beautiful venue and a great stage, and we rocked it up. It was a good time, and looking forward to do that again.
We were just talking before we got on here. That venue every year does this thing called Grammys on the Hill, and there's a lot of representatives there. And you just mentioned you're going to meet with one of them while you're in town right now.
Congressman Joe Crowley is an old friend. When he was 19 years old, I was out with my first album touring, and I was at Queens College in New York City. And these two college kids climbed into my dressing room window to get a towel signed. You know, and I was nice to them, thankfully. And why wouldn't I be? And he still has the towel to this day. So he's crazy. But he's a hardcore rock and roll fan, a really good guy. And we've been friends for some time. I sang at his birthday party. So I'm going to swing by the Capitol and say hello to Joe. I mean, it's funny saying that, but he's a really people.
While you're in D.C., you might as well, man.
He's a really good guy.
Yeah. That's awesome. And what will we be hearing at Hamilton? Is this your new Dylan album? Or
No, that's coming. I'm making a new album of Bob Dylan covers, songs of Bob, and coming out June 23rd. And we'll be doing a show on the 17th in Asbury Park, New Jersey, of June for that. But I'll be playing some of the stuff at the Hamilton. We're playing a couple of songs from that album. And we'll play songs from World War Willie and American Ride and some of the other albums that we've been putting out. Having a mighty, mighty fine fun time. I'll say that.
All those albums get super acclaimed, man. You always find them in top 10 lists at the end of the year from various magazines.
People have no taste. What are you going to do? You know, that's just proof to me that people have no taste. What's that great Groucho Marx line? I don't want to be a member... I don't want to join any club that would have me as a member.
Yeah, Woody Allen used to always quote it. Yeah. Speaking of Groucho, before we dive in, your jacket you're wearing right now has Marx Brothers on the back.
Yeah.
Explain who made it.
I have a black jacket. I'm small. I'm not a big fella. I'm a small guy, you know, and it's hard to find jackets. So I was shopping with my girlfriend in New York City and found this black stretch jacket that fit. It's hard to find good stage jackets. And I said, this could be great. And I said, but it's got no nothing on it but black. And she said, well, I could cut up some T-shirts and sew them on. And so I've got like a half a dozen of these with different characters. This one has the Marx Brothers on the back. I've got one with Charlie Chaplin on the back, Lou Reed, John Lee Hooker. It's just fun. You make your own jackets.
So great. And you wear them on stage at
Hamilton.
Yeah.
These are my stage jackets. Yeah. I'll be prancing around mightily and... Some strange.
So you
got
to come out to Hamilton to see which one he's wearing. Awesome. Take me more into the Dylan album, because that sounds awesome.
Last May, a year ago May, it was a 75th birthday, and in New York City is a venue called City Winery, and there was a show going on there where they were going to honor Bob, and they called and asked me if I'd sing four songs of Bob's, and I said, well, let me give it a think, and I looked one night late through all of his songs. I thought, well, I'll only do them if I think I could have fun with it or bring something to it. And I found some, you know, Hard Rains Are Gonna Fall and Rainy Day Women and a few others. And it was so much fun singing them live and kind of rocking them up a bit. And it just was a ball. And I mean, Bob's the Shakespeare of rock and roll. And you know, I've met him a number of times, and I'm good buddies with his manager. And it's a great, those songs are so powerful. And so, you know, I have grandchildren now, and if nothing else, a door for them to Bob's work. So we had a mighty time with the band. We had the drummer for the Spin Doctors, Aaron Comez, a great, also James Maddock, great guitar, a singer-songwriter in New York, my bass player, Johnny Paisano, and my lead guitar player, Matt Hogan. But the record came out. We made it so quick, and the vocals are all live, my lead vocals. Bob's songs are great, so you start out with great material. You know, you can screw it up, of course, but we didn't. We really had a ball with it.
Didn't you say there's a blowing in the wind like the Ramones?
I was sitting around one night with my guitar, and I thought, well, what could I do to this? You know, and we rocked it up pretty good. It's kind of like I Want to Be Sedated meets Bob Dylan on Backstreet in the East Village. in the hot summer.
And you have plenty of experience in the East Village, the whole Greenwich folk scene coming up. Because explain to our listeners, you were born in Buffalo, right? Explain how you sort of made it from there all the way into down to New York.
I was born in Buffalo, New York, and my grandfather was a vaudeville. He ran an orchestra for like 20 years in vaudeville, 7 nights a week. Played piano, did arrangements. And my father used to tell us all these stories about going to see the Seal Acts, the comedians, the films. And my grandfather could really play the piano. He used to put a sheet, a white sheet, over the piano and play the sheet.
Wow.
Fascinating.
Sheet music.
the original definition of sheet music. As a kid, as a little, you know, 3-4-year-old kid, that was something to see. So there's a lot of history of music in my family, but I was bitten by the rock and roll bug in the early days, you know, from Elvis and Chuck Berry, Little Richard. You know, and the Everly Brothers, through the British Invasion, that was really my prime. That really hit me, you know, the Beatles, the Stones, Dylan, all that stuff. Grew up there, went to the University of Buffalo, and when I graduated, I moved to New York City, looking to try to make a living as a songwriter, making records. You know, I had never played before on stage, but I had all these songs. And got to tour with The Who in the early 80s across the U.S. That was such a thrill. You know, I'd heard from the record company that someone from the record company said, "Oh, Pete Townsend's a big fan of your record, my first record." And I just said, "Oh, that's nice." But I thought to myself, "Yeah, sure he is." And when we were playing in Los Angeles, we toured across the country. First time I ever toured with a band, 3 weeks in. And their management came to see us play, see me play. Freddie Mercury came out that night to see me play. And anyway,
wow. So
they asked us. Yeah, it was crazy. And they asked, he said, "Do you want to open the tour?" Because they were just on tour. And they actually kicked some band that was opening off the tour, put me on it, and we toured across the U.S. with The Who. It was
Was this like 1980-ish?
It was 1980. Yeah. And it was. I never even in my wildest dreams imagined anything like that. I'd seen them in Buffalo one time, you know, earlier. And that was The Who, Pete Townsend, every night, Roger Daltrey. Entwistle was still alive at the time. And new drummer, Kenny Jones at the time. What a blast. It was like living a dream. And the record company didn't want to support it. They said, "Oh, no, you'll get booed off the stage," because they tried to talk me out of doing the tour. And they said, nobody wants to see an opening act with The Who, and I understand that. I said, "Yeah, that may be the case. Boo or not, I can't turn this down."
You don't turn that down.
As a fan, I did it to see The Who play.
Yeah.
Close up.
What were they backstage? I mean, we've all seen the music, but
they were so great. I mean, we had total access. We could go in hang out in the dressing rooms. They couldn't have been nicer to us. You know, the management on down, Pete, Roger, John, couldn't have been nicer. And they made us feel welcome. And every night was an arena, and the fans were wild.
Yeah.
I remember we were in Dallas. It was July 4th, and somebody shot a rocket across one end of the, some kind of a, you know, firework went flying while we're on stage. And I learned that after only, I was 3 weeks in playing ever with a rock and roll band on stage, because I had only played solo before that, acoustic. And here I am opening up for The Who. It was a riot. And I had, you know, enough, let's say I had no brains. And so it was so much fun. And I learned how to talk to 20,000 people. Yeah. You just talk slow. And you say Roger Daltrey and Pete's name a few times, and you're good to go. It was so great. I actually played in November. Roger Daltrey did a cancer benefit in New York City on Wall Street. A lot of high rollers. And the guy putting it on is a big fan of a friend of mine, and he wanted me. He knew I knew Roger. And so he set it up, and I got to play with Roger. We traded verses on Substitute, Won't Get Fooled Again, and See Me, Feel Me. And it was like, I mean, still pinching myself. So I'm a pretty lucky guy.
So he liked you. Roger liked you enough to invite you back all these years later.
Oh, yeah. I've stayed in touch with him. He came out to see me a few years back when I was in England. We've stayed in touch, you know, and they're really good guys. It's surprising. You'd be surprised. I mean, I don't know everybody in the whole entertainment pantheon, but... Right. I know The Who. Springsteen's a good buddy. Mm-hmm. And when you're sitting with these people, you know, their feet are on the ground. They've been through it. They're, you know, you can hang and have a drink with Bruce 2 a.m. and like talking to anybody. And yet it's Bruce Springsteen. And The Who, they're great. I've been very fortunate, you know. Ringo, even. I did a tour in, I think it was 92. Invited me to open up for Ringo. Somebody got sick, and they said, "Can you make it?" "Sure, I can make it." Ringo Starr, hello. So we opened up in New York City, and they liked it. they liked it a lot, and they said, would you continue in the Northeast? So we ended up doing the Northeast run of a tour with Ringo Starr and the All-Star Band. And the last night of the tour, we're in Saratoga, Performing Arts Center up in Saratoga. Yeah, New York. And I'm on the side of the stage watching Ringo. And the last song of his set is Photograph. That's because all I've got is a photograph. And he comes off the stage, and he sees me about, I don't know, 30, 40 feet away, and makes a point. He's got to do encores. He makes a point of coming beeline over to me because he knew it was my last night. Says, Willie, I just want to say thank you. Shook my hand, gave me a big hug, and says, you did a great job. Thank you. It was old school, you know, rock and roll, and of him to do that. And when he hugged me, he was covered with sweat. And I thought, Beatles sweat. I'm covered in Beatles sweat.
Well, it must be wild because you mentioned that.
I haven't washed since, no.
You grew up watching them, and then of a sudden you're playing with Ringo and getting singing, sweat all over you.
Well, anyway, he said to me, he said, do you want to come on and sing I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends? And it was a great honor to do that. And it was, you know, Nils Lofgren was on stage. Nils is a buddy. So I've been pretty blessed, you know, when it comes to, there's something to be said for following your dreams, you know. I'm still doing that, and it's not always easy, but these days it's rocking. Rolling.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That was awesome hearing about The Who and Ringo. Tell me, go more into The Boss. You mentioned Bruce and how you could have a drink with him at 3 a.m., but, man, well, he does those marathon shows like 4 hours, and I don't know how they still do it. Him and the E Street are just – we actually just talked to Little Steven like last week.
Really?
It's crazy how they do that. That's just endurance out of beyond.
Yeah, it's beyond. I don't know how they do it. You know, I mean, I'll do shows 2 hours and stuff, but enough, but every night, 3:45, four hours. And he's not just, you know, whispering – you know, acoustic folk songs.
Right.
He's rocking. I met Bruce in the early 90s, and I knew his wife, Patty Scalfa, from years earlier playing in the Jersey Shore when she was singing background for Southside Johnny. And she said, oh, we love your new record. This is back then, you know. We work out to it in the morning, you know. I couldn't believe it. I go, really? Yeah. And so, we met a couple of days later, and you know, we've been friends since, and he's just a decent guy, you know, the kind of guy that, when people always ask me, what's Bruce like? And I say, you know what, if you knew him in day-to-day life, he's everything you'd hope he'd be. He's a regular guy, he's a good guy, you know, with big dreams and a really big giving heart. I mean, you don't do those shows, he doesn't have to do any more shows. He doesn't have to, you know, he does it because he loves the music. It means something to him, and he loves giving to the audience. The guy knows how to throw a party, let's put it that way. But he's a really good guy. I've been, you know, he's joined us on stage a number of times. There's a charity benefit we do up in Asbury Park every year, and he's joined us for a number of times with my band, and a number of times he's invited me to sing with him on stage. Shea Stadium, twice, Giant Stadium for 70,000. And I come on stage, right? And I when I was at Chase Stadium, 2003, I think it was, one of the Mets pitchers, Al Leiter, was about to go sing with them, and he was petrified. And I said, Al, wait, you pitch a baseball like in a World Series over a little white object with 60,000 people screaming, you know, bloody murder.
Hanging on your every pitch.
I said, you're going to go out there. The E Street Band got it covered. It's easy. I've done it. Just go and have a good time.
They have lighters in their audience every night.
He went out there, and he was petrified.
Oh, man.
And when he walked off, he looked like a ghost. And I could see Little Steven was laughing because he was so scared. But he just goes to show. I mean, I couldn't pitch. None of us could do what he does. But the E Street Band got it covered. So when I walked out Giant Stadium, Bruce invited me up to sing a few songs. 70,000 people going crazy. I mean, the noise level, you know, it's like you're behind a jet airplane taking off. Yeah. And it's full of love. You know, it's New Jersey Giant Stadium. And I went up to sing a couple songs. Bruce is very giving. We have a good time together. And he rocks. And so I was on stage standing next to him and kind of pushing him a little bit to the side. Hey, Bruce, you rock. You're laughing. And then I left the stage after two songs. And I was in the back, and somebody says, he's calling for you to come back on stage. He kept saying on stage, get Willie back out here. So I went back for a third song, and we did another rocker. And it was one of those times, you know how Springsteen and the band go all to the front of the stage? They run up. Well, they did that, and I go, well, I guess I've got to go. So I went with them. So we're right near the front of the stage. Everybody's all crowded. And there's this woman looking up at me with the expression on her face like, who the hell is that?
What are you doing up
there? What are you doing up there? Yeah, yeah. I just looked at her and kind of shrugged, went, I don't know.
Is that Al Leiter?
It was, yeah, right. It's Al Leiter.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's so great. I love hearing that about Bruce because everyone that loves his music, it's so great to hear.
Anybody who cares, you know, would like to know what he's like.
He's the genuine artist.
Everything you hope he would be. No, he couldn't be more down to earth. He'll go to Jersey out for a drink, you know, ride his motorcycle. We go out, you know, just have a drink, hang with, you know, people don't bother him. He's just tries to live in as normal life as you can imagine, being someone of that, you know, that iconic.
So
he's great. A great guy.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
And then doubling back to Ringo for a second, and the Beatles, did I read that you played in the same studio as Lennon the night he was killed?
Yeah, that's a whole other side. Yeah, I was in 1980. I was making my second album in December, December 5th of 1980.
Yeah.
I took my band in to make my second album for Arista Records. And it was a Friday night. We started our record, and John Lennon and Yoko were, I was in Studio A, one of the big rooms, and John was in the mix room upstairs with Yoko, working on a Yoko project. And my co-producer knew John, Tom Pernunzio, and he knew John, he'd worked with him years past, and he said, you know, you want to meet John? I says, yeah, absolutely, but let's wait a couple of days, maybe we'll record something, maybe we'll, you know, play him something, who knows. And I wanted it. We needed to get the recording. So this was Friday night. So we figured, all right, Tuesday night, we'll go see him. So Sunday night, the 7th of December, midnight, we're in the studio recording, and the phone rings at midnight, and it's one of John's engineers, and they say that John is out of guitar strings. Do you have any guitar strings that he could use? And so we just looked at John Lennon, his guitar strings, so we go diving in our bags and pull out guitar strings. I was going to put a note with the strings to John, thanks for the music, you know, love you,
yeah.
You know. And I thought, I'm going to meet him in a couple of days. I'll just tell, it's too corny, I'll tell him when I see him. So we sent the strings up about midnight, and we left that studio about 2 in the morning that night. The next day, Monday, December 8th, 1980, we came in about 4:30. I've got the call sheet for that day, you know, the schedule. And he was in at 7, we were in at 4:30. And the engineer said John played on those strings from midnight to about 4:30 in the morning on a song called Walking on Thin Ice. It's a great track, Yoko's song. And the guitar playing is just like so visceral, so raw and rocking, you know, just it's the last thing he ever recorded. And about 10:30 that night, we're in the studio recording, Monday night, December 8th, 10, something like that, 20 after 10, the phone rings. Unbeknownst to me, Tom Pannunzio, the co-producer, had a buddy in New Jersey bugging him all week. Mm-hmm. Can you get me John's autograph? Can you get me John's? He was a collector. Mm-hmm. And we had done a favor the night before, so Tom called the engineers. I didn't know any of this till later. He called the engineers and said, the guy who gave John the strings would love an autograph. His name is Ken. Well, my name is Willie Nile, you know, and John didn't know me, I don't think. But anyway, so the phone call was saying, John's coming down now. So Tom went, he just said, I'll be right back. So he left the room. We're listening back to a take that we had just done without Tom. And Tom comes in, he goes, somebody just shot John. And I said, well, John who? It didn't make any sense. What do you mean, John? Somebody shot John. John who? John Lennon. I go, what? And you figure, well, shot, what does that mean? Maybe in the hand, maybe in the foot. Sadly, it wasn't the case. And the phone started ringing off the hook. David Geffen called the woman, secretary answered the phone. He said, John's there, right? Some Yoko's friend just said he's on the way to the hospital. He'd been shot, but he's there recording, right? And she said, well, no, he left about 15 minutes ago.
Oh, my God.
It was so terrible. And we were all crying, you know, and they announced this. We watched TV like everybody else, and you know, one of my heroes, John Lennon, and I'd give anything to go back in time and to know that and go upstairs and say, hey, you know, and you know what? He had a bodyguard. The record plant hired a bodyguard. This story, people don't know this. Nobody knows this. There was a bodyguard that they hired to guard him whenever he was in the studio. His name was Bobby. large African-American. Great guy. Big guy, like 6'6", 300 pounds. And I would tease him. I would walk up to him with my fists up. Okay, let's do it. And I'm so small. It was, you know, it was a good guy. So the next day after John was killed, I was talking to Bobby, you know, Bobby, what happened? And he said, he was telling us, he was just, you know, tears in his eyes. He said, when we got in the elevator to leave, John was in the greatest mood. He said, John was in absolute, because the press, Double Fantasy was number one, you know, and it was the album that John made, you know, with Yoko. They alternated songs. And he said, Bobby said, John was, felt he was so happy because Yoko was finally getting respect from the press. Mm-hmm. And that meant the world to him. And they got in the elevator, and having just mixed this track, Walking on Thin Ice. It's a great track. It's just it's a searing, well, great track. And John said to Bobby, hey, because Bobby was going to take him home, and he says, Bobby, let's go to dinner, have dinner, let's celebrate. And Bobby said, I'm sick to my stomach, I don't feel good. And John put his arm around him and said, don't worry, you go home, you know, go home, get feel better, we'll do another night. So instead of Bobby getting in the car with them, going to the restaurant and then home, he'd have been with him, and he'd been watching out.
So people don't know this about him being sick to his stomach and all this?
No, he told me that the next day. I've never read that, never heard that.
Wow.
So had he gone with him, things maybe could have changed, and he felt really bad about it. I said, Bobby, what can you do?
Yeah.
We're not, you know, can't see the future. Anyway, it was a very sad day, and
You gave him the strings to play on.
I gave him the strings to play on, but he gave me all those amazing songs and all those thrills and all that inspiration that got me interested in making music. So, and that night, I played with Ringo in Saratoga. The song we sang was I Get By With a Little Help From My Friends, mm-hmm. a song John wrote for Ringo. Mm-hmm. So when I was singing on stage that night, 12 years later, 1992, on mic with Nils Lofgren, I couldn't help but think back 12 years to the... Because this was a John song, you know, and I'll miss him all my life, as will most of us, you know.
Oh, my gosh. And
God bless John Lennon.
Absolutely.
God bless John Lennon.
And it's stories like that, which is why, I mean, I feel like you've been at all these different places in music history, and that's why they're making a documentary, right? Tell us about that.
I've been lucky, you know. I mean, it's just, you never know. You do your best, and you just try to do the best work you can. Treat people good, And my father's advice, do the best you can, treat people good, and leave the rest in God's hands. Mm-hmm. You know, my dad's pretty devout, religious. And that's good advice, you know. Mm-hmm. I've been lucky. You know, I've worked hard. I never gave up. I persevered. There's a fella in Austria, a director, is making a documentary about me. And I said, well, why do you want to make a documentary about me, you know? And he said, because your story's unique. You know, you have more passion. You have the same passion or more now than when you first came to New York. I'm writing my best stuff, the albums I'm making now. Like I made World War Willie, the album I made, came out last spring. It was voted best album of the year for Twangville magazine. It's on a bunch of top tens. And American Ride, 2 years ago, I put out. And that album won Independent Music Awards best rock album of the year.
Didn't Bono say really great things about
American
Ride?
I've been lucky. I mean, I can't be sitting and bragging about myself.
Yeah.
Which proves that people have no taste, as I said earlier. That just proves to me that people have no taste whatsoever. But I'll give them their due. Bono gave me, I've gotten quotes. Lou Reed gave me a beautiful quote. Bono gave me a beautiful quote. He said, when I asked him for a quote for American Ride to help get the word out about the album, I'm going to try to remember what he said. He said that...
I have it if you need it.
You got it there? I forget what it is. What is it? I forget what he said.
He said... this is Bono saying, one of the great guides to unraveling the mystery that is the troubled beauty of America.
Yeah. God bless him.
That's poetic itself. But
when I saw that, I mean, I was sitting at my desk and I opened up an email and I see it's from Bono and I went, well, first of all, what? You know, and I look at the quote, you know, a great guide to unraveling the troubled beauty, you know, that is America. I mean, the troubled beauty. Yeah, he's a poet.
Yeah,
and another good guy. He's nice to me. He takes a lot of heat because of all the work he does in Africa. But I'll tell you what, I'll tell people that I've met him a few times, and you know he's raised billions of dollars for AIDS and medicine and care, and you know if you save one life, that's worth it. Hey,
save the world entire.
You know, just save one life, and he's done more than that. And he's a great guy. And he's a poet, too. Give me a great quote.
Absolutely.
He's a piece of work, that
guy. But anyway, but we were, sorry to tangent everybody, but we were talking about the filmmaker, the guy in Austria.
They're making a movie about me. I don't know when it'll come out, maybe next year or the year after, but he's been following me around with a camera over in Europe and in the States. He went to Buffalo and interviewed my father for a couple hours.
Wow.
My father's 99, and he's doing great. Lives alone, knocking on wood. I played golf with him last year.
He's still golfing at 99?
Well, I think it's done now, but he shot a 98 when he was 98. I know, exactly. He's a salt of the earth guy and a special man. I love him dearly. And so Lucas, the filmmaker, went to Buffalo and interviewed my dad. When we went back to Austria to show some clips of stuff he had filmed to some of his friends, they all said, "This guy's the star of the film, my dad." And I said, "There you go.
Now we found our angle.
Now you got a movie there. There's a star for you." Anyway, yeah, so we're having some fun with it. You know, it'll involve some social issues. You know, when I was in D.C. 2 Augusts ago, Malala, the Nobel Prize winning that young girl who was shot in the head by the Taliban.
Yeah.
She was speaking at the museum. About empowering women.
She's so inspirational. So and that movie, if you guys have not seen that movie, that documentary, oh my gosh.
She's remarkable and so revered around the world as a spokesperson for girls and women and education and health and just uplifting girls and women. Anyway, a friend of mine at The Voice of America was sponsoring the event, and they wanted to use a song of mine called "This Is Our Time." And I said, I'd be honored, yeah. So I took the train down. I went to the event and met her father, mother, and her two brothers, and got a really sweet picture of her and I. And on the way back on the train, I wrote a song about, you know, empowering women. And I'm recording it now.
What's it called?
I don't want to say.
Okay.
You know, I have to kill you. But it's about empowering women, and she's very inspiring, and we'll have that we'll have a piece of that in the movie, because it's something that, you know, I believe in helping others, trying to spread a good word. Life is hard. Even if everybody got along, if everybody was pals on the planet, if nations were all buddies, it would still be difficult. Yeah. Life is hard, and obviously people aren't buddies, you know. And I like to address things as, well, look, let's say a little 7-year-old kid gets hit by a bike in a cul-de-sac, and Bill O'Reilly lives on one side, and Ken Olbermann lives on the other side. Well, they probably run out to help the kid. I like to meet at that place.
Yeah.
You know, life is hard. So I'm going to have some things about social issues, you know, empowering women and why hunger in the film and some of the Parkinson's work we're doing, just so it's got some meat on its bones. But it's fun. You know, if it inspires somebody, if it's good, then I'll be happy. If it's not, then I'll leave town.
Well, look for the Malala song in the documentary. What's the doc called? You mentioned outside there's a tagline, right? You mentioned a hilarious tagline.
Oh, the documentary, yeah. You know, the movie's called One Guitar, the Willie Nile story. And when I was talking to this, to Lucas, when he came, he flew from Austria to meet me and try to convince me he wanted to do this movie. And I've said no a few times. People don't need to see my mug up there on the screen. And we were talking about it, and I was intrigued. And I told him a story. I'd been in Paris in 1980 doing interviews across Europe. My drummer and I, J.D. Doherty, basically drank our way across Europe doing interviews. You know, no shows, just interviews. It was really interesting and fun. And so I'm in Paris at some 5-star restaurant, and and I'm quote-unquote the next big thing. I was way overhyped. And he says to me, "So Willie, how would you describe rock and roll?" And I just said without thinking, "Rock and roll is a Marx Brothers movie you can dance to."
And I love it.
And he goes, "Wee." You know, and when I told Lucas that, he said, "Well, that's the tag for our film." And you know, so he's a smart guy. He gets a lot of Lucas is a smart cat. So I'm excited about it. Could be interesting.
A Marx Brothers movie you can dance to. That's rock and roll, baby.
That's rock and roll, baby, yep.
That's so great. That's so great. That's awesome. Well, is there anything we're leaving out? I mean, otherwise, let's just
be good to each other, people. Do the best you can to be good to each other and enjoy good music and support it when you can. And April 8th, we're coming to the Hamilton and with my band, my rock and roll band. And this band is one of the best bands in the world. I say that humbly. These guys are amazing. I put them up against any other band. We have so much fun. Guaranteed. If you have socks when you're leaving the building, I'll give your money back. Meaning we'll knock your socks off. We have so much fun. People leave happier than when they came in. You know, so I love the venue. After soundcheck, I always take a walk to the White House, take a look. You know, and I'm looking forward to April 8th at the Hamilton. So be good to each other, people, and go support the local music around you.
And wear two pairs of socks, because at least one of them's getting knocked off.
Yeah, take an extra pair of socks in your purse or your sport coat or your leather jacket, because you'll need it on the way out.
That's so great. Willie Nile, you can turn a phrase into an interview as well as a song. Thanks so much. It's Saturday, April 8th at Hamilton Live, and look out for the Dylan album and the documentary as well coming up. So lots of stuff.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. If people, you know, WillieNile.com is where you can find more information about the music and stuff. But thank you for taking the time to have me here. You're a brave soul. I did my best to behave. Well,
it worked out.
You were
pretty good.
Pretty good. Pretty good. Not too bad. I'll do better next time.
Awesome.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.